Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Habits You Love.
Baby situated.
Get that boy right. You got cords and boys and...
Phone on do not disturb. Milk in hand. Okay.
All right. There we go. Little all-star.
All right.
Right. Go ahead. Start us off, Kayla. Give us your little introduction here.
Welcome to Habits You Love. This little guy's doing one habit he loves. Eating.
Yeah, eating and sleeping.
Eating and sleeping. In mom's arms, that's all he likes to do.
So how are you today?
Good.
How was your morning?
I think I got the best night's sleep of the 3 weeks so far last night.
I think all three of you guys were asleep before I was, and I stayed up late watching a little bit of The Gentlemen.
Yeah.
I couldn't go to sleep, and I woke up really early, and that's all I could think about, the stupid TV series.
It's so good.
Episode's deep, so I can't say much.
Yeah, I would say that was the best night of sleep I've gotten so far. We've only slept 2 or 3 hours at a time very deeply. He woke up maybe 3 times to eat, but he ate really well, went right back to sleep, and yeah, so I was like, okay, can get used to that. Yeah. I don't know if it's because we had him out all day, like outside, and wore him out, but that was nice. So I feel refreshed today. To answer your question, I feel refreshed. Mm-hmm. I feel like I got a good night's sleep. And
tell everybody what we got to do yesterday. Yesterday was a fun day for us.
Yeah, it was like the second half of the day, but your family was in town and they were staying at a resort on Longboat Key. So we got to go out there and hang by the pool and bring this little man, and he got to be at the resort.
And got to be tourists for a day, and we got to sit out by the pool, and someone brought me a Cuban sandwich by the pool. How cool is that?
And some drinks.
And some fries and a beer.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. We went down to the beach, put his little toes in the water for the first time.
I was saying, you know, it's really cool that we get to go out there and do that all day and hang out with the family, and then we just have to drive 20 minutes to go back home, and poor family's got to fly all the way back home a few hours. So
not us. We live in paradise, so
very, very lucky.
Yeah, how would you say this past week has been, you know, with everything?
It's good. I think we're just trying to, I think we've kind of got a little routine.
Yeah,
he really hasn't changed our routine too much, except for, you know, you have to be...
I'm bunkered down, basically. Yeah. You get to wake up and go do your thing.
You've never been locked in like that. You've always been go, go, go.
I know.
So,
but yeah, we do have a good little routine. You stay up about an hour or 2 hours, just in case he's awake and feed him. And then in the morning time, you sleep in an extra hour or two. So we have like this like sliding scale of sleep going on. But he has a pretty good routine as far as from about 8 a.m. to 11. He's wide awake. He wants to eat most of the time, or, you know, on and off. And then he falls asleep around 11 for a couple hours. That's kind of when I get everything done. But yeah, he's pretty consistent.
Yeah, you guys are awesome.
Pretty consistent. Awesome. Yeah, but I would say my life, obviously it's very drastically different, but it's not like overwhelming. It's not like, right, oh my gosh, what did I do? I like it. It's fun. Yeah. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, you're doing a good job. I think you've made the transition very well. You made it seamlessly, you know?
I'm very adaptable. You got to be adaptable in life.
Yeah.
Do whatever can happen.
Well, so this whole child situation kind of brings us into maybe our topic of today, or topic of discussion, which is us becoming parents. And then on the flip side of that, we've both dealt with losing a parent. So here you are, a new mother, beautiful young mom. And, you know, you've had to deal with the tragedy of losing your mother. And I have, you know, recently dealt with the tragedy of my father. And here I am becoming a father. So both of us are really transitioning. You know, I know you say that often. I'm in a transition period. Well, this is a transition period for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, a big difference is mine was 8 years ago and yours was 8 weeks ago, basically. Obviously a little more,
but
you know, so yours is very fresh. Mine, I've had a lot of time to grieve and deal with what happened with my side. And I feel like you're all of this happened for you at once. Mm-hmm. So, but I think you've done really well and
thank you.
Had a good head on your shoulders already. So that's good. And you know, have your days, have your moments, mm-hmm. but I think you're really good about letting your feelings come to the surface and mm-hmm. getting them out. And although I would say when they do come now, it's shorter than it used to be. It's like your eyes will tear up, but then that's about it. Whereas it used to be like minutes of crying, you know? Yeah. But yeah, obviously that came with time. But I didn't know if you wanted to share. I feel like maybe a lot of people can relate to both of our stories. And so yeah, we're just gonna share our experiences with grieving a parent to now becoming a parent and how you lost your dad, I lost my mom. So now I have my dad and you have your mom. So it's kind of opposite stories and the synchronicities we have of, you know, you meeting my mom and me meeting your dad and just so many coincidences.
Really? A lot of coincidences.
Yeah.
Which coincidences are God's way of staying anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
That quote is by Albert Einstein.
Thanks, Albie. Mm-hmm. I guess the very first memory in sequential order would be you meeting my mom.
I met your mother on Siesta Key Beach. I'm not sure what year it was.
15 is when she was here, the beginning of the year.
Okay.
So remember, she came home April 2015, and then she passed away June 2015. So she was here in Florida for like 3 months. Mm-hmm. It'd be like February, March, April.
I was around her once or twice. We were out on Siesta Key Beach. At that time, I remember my mom or grandmother, I think it was my grandmother, you know, I didn't know you then. I had met probably everybody in your family, I think, but I hadn't met you yet. And I remember my grandmother, someone saying, you know, this is Tony, or she said, we're going to go meet these people. And I think she even mentioned like your mom was kind of going through some really hard times and maybe faced with some depression. So we were just trying to get out and enjoy the day and soak up some sunshine. And I kind of remember thinking like, man, how could you be depressed? Like you're on Siesta Key Beach and you're at the ocean. And, you know, I was just so thrilled and excited to be there. I didn't understand that, like, that doesn't fix things, mm-hmm. you know, just because you're in paradise doesn't change your mental clarity. And so, like I said before, I really wish that I would have got to know her more. You know, I think I was probably not paying attention, or I was just kind of doing whatever it is. And
yeah, but you wouldn't have thought anything different at that time.
Yeah, like, yeah. So
meet your daughter,
poor little guy.
Yeah, no, I remember thinking, you know, how could you be depressed in paradise? Like, how is that possible? Well, I would shortly learn. And I think it was probably not long after that I went through some stages of depression and went through some things. And I realized that it doesn't matter where you are. If your mind is troubling you, then it's troubling you. It doesn't matter where it is. If you're battling in your own head with your own self-talk, that's a battle that can take place anywhere on the map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they say no matter where you go, there you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what it reminds me of. So I know when I made the transition out here to Florida, like, I got to get myself right. Like, I got to get myself right.
Mm-hmm.
And how to get myself right was I found the best way was to exert energy.
So
coping with the emotional and mental toll of a loved one's illness, you know, how was that being a daughter to a mother that had some depression, anxiety. I'm not sure exactly what, you know,
both.
What's going on. Yeah, depression, anxiety. So as a daughter, How did you feel witnessing your mother kind of going through these?
At the time, honestly, my feelings were, I was very confused as to how she could be like that. From an outsider looking in, it seemed as though we had no issues in our family. There was no big overbearing, like, we're going through this hard time. This happened in our family. It was just, everyone was fine. Like, every sibling was fine. My parents seemed fine. They had a nice house. They had a nice car. They just went on vacation to California. So from me looking in, I was like, how could you be like this? You know,
I kind of felt the same whenever.
Yeah. So then that was before obviously being able to relate and resonate, and before going through my own stuff, I was like, I just didn't understand and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to help. I felt very helpless. I felt very hopeless. Just seeing both of my parents go through that, it's like, what am I supposed to do here? Like, the only thing I knew what to do was to just physically be at their house and just be a presence in their house. But other than that, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to act. I didn't have the right word.
This incident, you know, took place. These things took place. Like, how long afterwards do you think it took for it to hit you? Or how long did it take for you to come to terms with what had happened? Or what was the grieving process like? Or how did you deal with something like that?
It was a very big shock. It was and it wasn't, just because she had said it so many times. But in my mind, I was always like, she'll never do it. Like, she'll never do that. You know, it was always like, oh, I feel like she's just at the very, very bottom. And maybe she does not want to be here right now, but she'll never do that.
So when she expressed these things, she said them directly to you? Like,
I never heard them directly out of her mouth to me. But when she was here in Florida, my grandma was saying how she had said multiple times. She had just sat down with my grandma in a very casual conversation and told her the ways she had thought about doing it. She was like, I thought about doing it this way. And like, just very blasé as far as, I thought about doing it like this.
So she was here telling your grandmother those thoughts, and she was here for a couple months.
Yeah.
And then she went back home, and then she was there for a couple months, and then this incident took place.
Yeah.
So it's like,
so I don't know if she, I don't know why they sent her back. Mm-hmm. Did they think she was better? Was it just like, I know they didn't give up on her. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, we don't know what to do. Let's just send her back. I think they really thought she was better. And I think she kind of tricked us all into thinking that she had gotten better being here those 3 months. And
maybe she did.
Maybe she did for a little bit. Yeah. And then going back to the environment where it was toxic, you know, it's like, oh, okay, back to this. And I think she just kind of felt helpless again. So like you said, yeah, she was here until April. We picked her up at the airport. We had like a sign and flowers, and we were all so happy. Like, we have a picture of it. 2 months later, she was gone. So the grieving process for me, like I said, it was a huge shock that she even did it in the first place. So I think when you go into literal shock, like, your hormones can go into shock. It's almost like getting into a car accident.
Yeah, your body's tricking yourself.
It's like when you get into a very bad car accident, it's like your adrenaline and your hormones can make you go into shock. And then from there, it's kind of like just disassociation for me.
Your
it was,
body and your mind are doing that for you.
It was like, just, I know I've said it several times on many episodes or interviews, but I was just like, all right, that's life. Let's just move on. And even the wake at my mom's wake, people were coming up to me and being like, are you okay? Because I wasn't showing any emotion, any feeling. I wasn't crying.
Why do you think that is?
I was just trying to block it out. I was just trying not to feel anything. Yes.
How have you changed in that department, or how have you learned to deal with those things or deal with your feelings?
I would say 2 years later, after I finally was like, okay, I think what happened to me, happened to my family, is actually affecting me current day. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started to go to therapy. And that's when I started to actually have to tell my therapist my feelings. Once a week, every week for over a year was more than I had done it in 29 years altogether. So I think then I started getting the practice of it, of like, okay, nothing bad happens when I share my feelings, you know? Like,
that's
good.
When did you make that epiphany?
When I was in therapy, I was like, wow, that's cool. The world around me actually didn't fall apart.
It actually feels a little good.
Yeah, it felt good.
Holding a secret. It's like, you have a secret or something, and it's like, tell you, but I can't tell you. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah, so then when I just started opening up to my therapist about my feelings, then that's when, you know, I got a little bit more courageous outside of therapy, and I would tell a regular person a feeling it was happening. And then, you know, just snowballs from there. But obviously, just getting it out of your head and out of your brain just felt a lot better. And yeah, talking through it through therapy helped me, you know, kind of jumpstart that process. And then I felt like I obtained the tools from therapy to do it on my own. And then just talking about my mom, just talking about her, because I feel like the first 2 years, if I would talk about her, I would cry. Like, I felt a lot of anger. I felt a lot of sadness. I would cry. And then it got to the point where I was like, okay, I'm actually like talking about my mom without crying. This is like progress. And then, yeah, just being able to share what happened eventually helped me a lot. Just being able to talk about it publicly. Like I said, I've had 8 years to kind of navigate this whole journey. And you know, I feel like me being a mom now is tribute to my mom. The other day I was looking at him and I was like, well, she'll never get to meet him, but
I wouldn't think of it like that. The realization that I had while we were in the hospital was I had this, man, my dad and Kayla's mom don't get to be here. Like, this is such a bummer. And then immediately the thought goes, no, dude, what are you talking about? Like, they are here. Like, they are him. He is them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he is their DNA.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, our parents had us, they raised us right, they got us to this level, and now we get to have this child, and we get to implement all these things that we've learned, all these great skills that we have. And I believe, not that we've outdone our parents, but I believe that they have put us in the position to actually surpass them. And that isn't bad. I hope one day that this man surpasses me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With his intellect, with his drive, with his skill, with his passion. Like, I hope he passes me. I hope he dunks on me. I hope he, you know, becomes the best man and a better man than I ever thought, you know, possible.
Yeah.
And so I believe that it is possible. And to say that they're not here is not true, because they are. They are there. They are in him. They are him, and they are us, and we are them. And it is up to us to honor them by living the best life that we possibly can and honor them. And
yeah, it's just so hard to be in a human physical body, because this life on earth is about connection with other people. And so when you lose a literal connection, when you cannot access someone anymore, being in a human body is so difficult. When you're like, he's going to live to be this old, and the people that were physically here 8 months ago, 8 years ago, are no longer here to have that connection with him. It's just so the feelings are so hard. Like, I can sit here and say, oh yeah, my mom's here. Like, she's here, but it's like, she's not really here.
Not physically.
Right.
Not,
so it's just, it's hard to.
She is in your DNA, and I know. You are her, and she is you. And so you have to be grateful for, you have to be grateful for the time that you get, even if it's not the amount of time that you want. Yeah. You have to be appreciative of the time that you do get. Like, I didn't expect ever to lose my father and to lose him the way that I did. But after he passed, I was like, wow, I am happy that I had those times. I'm happy that he taught me everything. I'm happy that we had those moments. We would always call each other. He would call me. Like, we would always kind of help keep each other even keel. And that's like rare to find somebody that you can say, yo, I'm depressed, or hey, I'm hurting, man. Like, this is what's going on. And to have that with your father, to constantly, even I helped him the last year or two, a little over a year.
Yeah, we've talked about that several times, but it's just the synchronicity of you meeting my mom before meeting me 2015, and then her passing away in a pretty dramatic way. And now 8 years later, Then I met your dad mm-hmm. for the first time, which I had met him a couple times after we started dating, or I had been with him. But meeting your dad in Florida, the very first week I moved to Florida, the very first day I met you, I met your dad on, it wasn't Siesta, it was in Venice, but mm-hmm. I met your dad on the beach, just like you met my mom on the beach. And so then meeting your dad, and then meeting you that same day, and then now we're here. It's crazy, but no. And then your dad passed in a very dramatic way as well. I mean, very different, but
it's a crazy scenario. Yeah. It's a crazy scenario.
I don't know how much you want to get into it, but
well, I'll start with, you know, a while back you kind of asked me like, what's important to you? What do you think's important to you? And I said, my name, my last name, like that's what's important to me. And you know, I don't think you got that. I think you're kind of like, okay, Tyler, it's like other stuff. And it's like, no, there's not other stuff. It's my last name. It's me. It's my reputation. It's my family. So I have a picture and, this is my family and this is, me as a baby, and this is the Fight family here, the five generations of fights. So you have my dad here. This is my father, Jay. Kind of looks like me with the mullet. He's all buffed up. This is my grandfather here. My grandfather, Steve, Joe Steve. And then this is my great-grandfather here. And that's Joe, my grandpa Joe. He was a... a preacher and pastor. He was a Southern or Baptist preacher. He was awesome, man. My grandpa Joe, he's awesome. This is my great-great-grandfather, Leonard. Obviously, I didn't get a lot of time with him. I didn't know him really well. I was just a baby, but I did get to know my great-grandfather very well. We actually played in a basketball game one time. Me, my dad, grandpa, and my great-grandfather actually ended up playing, and he said, my grandfather called my great-grandpa. He said, hey, yeah, Dad, we got a basketball game down here, and we want you to come watch. We got a lot of the family playing. And he said, come watch. He said, how about you give me a jersey? I want to play.
How old was he?
He was 77.
Gosh.
And I was 15. So then Dad and Grandpa, you know, in between those ages, and man, I'll never forget that moment. I don't know if four generations have ever played in a basketball game, you know, honestly.
Yeah, and probably not.
And it was a competitive game. And I remember kind of getting a rebound and just throwing the ball down the floor. And as soon as the ball let go, like got out of my hands, I thought, oh, crap, that's my great grandpa, not my grandpa. Like my grandpa could still hoop. My great-grandpa was older, you know, so, but he caught the ball at the free throw line, hook shot, swish, nothing but net. And you've never seen another team be so excited about someone scoring a point. Even that other team was like, oh,
really?
Yeah. And it was like, it was just a cool moment, you know, to your great-grandson throws you the ball in a game, you hit a hook shot. It was awesome. I'll never forget that. Yeah. So, when you asked me what's important to me, I told you my last name. It's because that, you know, I was born in five generations. Like, those are good genes. Those are some good men right there in that photo. And I'm proud of that. I'm very proud of that. And I waited a little bit longer in life to kind of settle down and find that person. And I always knew that that person was out there. I just started a little bit later in life, but I'm blessed to, you know, to be here for us to have our son and for him to carry my last name is just so important to me. That's my legacy. That's, you know, means everything to me. So, you know, kind of that being said, essentially what happened with my father was he was in a very extreme automobile accident. He was in his work pickup truck, leaving a job site, going, I think, back to his job or the shop or whatnot. And he was in a big Dodge Ram pickup. And he ran into the back of a police motorcycle, and the man ended up passing away. And it's a tragedy for everybody involved, you know, I feel for that family, because the hard thing about this situation was the news and seeing how they can take somebody that hasn't been charged for a crime and just kind of run their name through the mud. And I think there's a perception of my father out there that was displayed by the news that I don't necessarily agree with. And I think they got to do what they got to do to make these news stories. But to be honest with you, not only did this man lose his life, he was protecting and serving our community. I know he helped at his local church. I know that this person had a young child. There were two families that were very affected by this. And so right at the accident, right when this was taking place, the first responding officer said, you know, he smelled alcohol in his breath. Well, turns out there was no alcohol in the system. There wasn't anything in the car. There weren't any drugs or paraphernalia or anything in the car. Some reports said that there were some chemicals in his system. So it's just a lot of moving parts, obviously. And so my father, he was incarcerated for over a year while they're trying to get all this stuff straight, you know? And
just holding him, just not charged with anything, just holding him.
Well, the very first thing that they tried to charge him with was murder. And so I think for that charge, it has to be premeditated, like he did that on purpose.
Yeah.
And
crazy.
My father, he would never hurt anybody. And you know,
I remember that. Timing of everything, as far as why did it have to be someone on a motorcycle? Why couldn't it have been a car? And then your dad being in his work truck, not his little tiny car. It's just,
yeah.
Why? Like, for me, I just go to why. Like, why did this happen? There's obviously some reason, and we haven't fully, that hasn't come to fruition yet, but every little detail had to be just right for that incident to happen. And like you said, both families were affected on each side. And I think when you said the news and the media and everything, it's like, they don't take into account both sides of how you might be feeling or your family might be feeling.
They don't take into consideration how the person that accidentally made a mistake or something happened, they don't take into consideration your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
They see that something happened and they think, this idiot did this. And it's like, no, that person has feelings, that person has intentions, that person has a family. Like, yeah, so, and even I think they misquoted my grandfather. They said, do you have anything to say about your son? He says, yeah, it was an accident. Four words. Mm-hmm. The news comes out saying it was a mistake.
Yeah.
It's only one word difference.
Then it makes a huge difference of how it looks and it's portrayed.
And I don't want to keep bashing the news, yeah,
but
to be honest with you, when my dad was going to court, cameras would be in his face. They would all be there, the news channels and stuff. And then they wouldn't even use footage from that day or that court. They would be using old footage. They'd be showing old pictures. It's like, you guys are trying to make him look like he's a mess. You guys are trying to make him look bad. And it's a bad situation. Like, it's a horrible situation.
You have to create the character to fit the role.
The narrative, yeah. Yeah, so there's a quote. I think it's a Gandhi quote. It says, an eye for an eye only makes the whole world blind. And I think I got that actually off the Buttercream Gang, some old movie. But
so what are you trying to say with that?
I think that they were looking for someone to blame in this situation. They needed to pin something on somebody. Somebody can't just have an accident and harm someone. It needs to be, well, they were malicious.
Yeah.
They were out of control. That's not the case here. I mean, I'm telling you guys that I know my father. I've been in 34 years. I know how he drives. And I know that when he's at work, he's at work. So when that came out and said that he had been drinking, I was like, if he ever had a drink, it was a couple drinks and it was at nighttime and it was after work. And, you know, but it didn't even really drink heavy at all. I mean, And I'm not trying to make excuses for anything. It's so my father's incarcerated. He's dealing with all this stuff in their state. He calls me, you know, pretty much every day. We fight each other. Continued our great relationship while he was incarcerated. And I was actually proud I was able to be there for him, that he needed that. He needed someone to talk to on the phone. He needed someone to keep him even keel, because you can go crazy in that place with all those people that a lot of those people had some accidents and made some poor choices to get there. And my dad kept me even keel a lot of years. And I feel like the last year and a half, he was incarcerated. I was the one kind of keeping him even keel. But every time he called, I answered if I could. And, you know, if I missed his call, I was,
oh, man. You can't just call him back.
You can't just call back. You know, it's a process. And it was even very hard for him to get letters in and out. He would write a letter, give it to someone. They say, oh, it's got to be sealed. No, the envelope needs to be unsealed. Oh, you need it. Yeah, so, and then it takes a week for the letter to even get out. And I don't want to talk really bad about the prison systems, but there needs to be some sort of, at least where he was incarcerated, was a horrible, horrible facility. This place had bed bugs, more than two, sometimes three people to a cell. The stuff is way outdated. Or did I say the bed bugs and just...
People died in there.
Multiple people are dying in that jail. How are we not going to be able to keep people alive?
The most secure place.
Who wouldn't want how bad it is? And I'm not saying these people need nice treatment. I'm not saying people that are incarcerated need good treatment. I'm saying they need fair treatment. There's a difference, you know, and it's disgraceful to have human beings in 2023 and 24 now to have to deal with this. And we can do better. We can. And prison, or not, this wasn't even prison, jail. Actually, if you get in trouble, this is supposed to help you get to be a better person and help you learn. This isn't to drag you down, hold you there, and keep you there. This is supposed to help you with your decisions. It's supposed to help you learn from these mistakes mm-hmm. and your choices. Yeah, so...
So explain why he was incarcerated for so long.
Well, essentially, right when it happened, I think they set the bond at like $1 million. So they set the bond at $1 million for my father, who has no criminal history. So that would be $100,000 to get him out. And I think, you know, that's what they wanted. They wanted us to spend all a bunch of money to get him out. And then they were going to throw him right back in there. So he was awaiting trial. You know, they kind of got to the point where they were ready to go to trial, and things just kept getting pushed back, and they want to get the evidence right. And I'm not.
It's just crazy that I think that, well, the reason they were holding him so long is because of that evidence that they had. If it was just a car accident, you can't. Yeah, can you hold someone that long?
I don't know. Yeah, they do. A lot of times that people, they can sit in jail for a long time awaiting trial or waiting for their court date. It's not really up to them. I think it's kind of up to the system to decide when their dates are and all that stuff. I'm not really sure.
It was just a very extensive amount of time.
It was a long, long time. I felt like, you know, he's waiting and waiting. And I know not knowing can be the worst feeling. The unknown is the worst feeling. And so I do have to say that while my father was in there, he was like reading his devotionals. He was praying every day. And he told me, he said, Tyler, I pray for you and your sister. You know, first, I pray for our family. Just how lucky and blessed I am to have this family and be a part of this family. He says, but, you know, my last prayer before I close out my prayer in the mornings is always for the victim, and it's always for the victim's family. And he said, and my last thing that I pray for after the family is I pray for a way out of here. It's my belief that God found a way out of there for him. So I talk to him every day, every other day. He said, I got to talk to you. We're FaceTiming this like crappy camera, horrible, whatever. At least I got to see his face. He says, Tyler, I got to tell you something. I'm like, what's up? He's like, man, and he was working out really hard while he was in there. And my dad's always been into fitness and he's a good looking dude. And so he was getting back into lifting and working out and reading. And I was just so happy for him because I told him, I was like, Dad, you've worked so hard as young. He was providing for me and my mom, being able to put my mom through court reporting school, had his own sheet metal business. Like, he's done it all. He's worked on the governor's mansion. He's worked on, all these student union buildings, prisons, and had clearance to special places. And so it's not like he was an idiot, or he was very, very good at his craft. And so anyways, he says, you know, I'm having some pain in my chest. I said, yeah, he's like, I'm kind of getting short-winded in my workouts, and this kind of started a while ago. And he told the people in the jail, like, hey, I'm having trouble breathing. Like, I can't get a full breath in. So, yeah, we'll take you, you know. So eventually, after he complained a long time, and even his cellmate is like, hey, like, he's having trouble. So then they take him to the hospital and they do a chest scan, x-ray. Turns out he has water in his lungs. So they drained about like 3 or 4 liters or something out of his lungs, do some tests. They send him back to jail. He's waiting there for a while. So he says, I don't know, we talked again, and he says, yeah, I might have to go back to the hospital, you know, later on when they run some tests and see what's up.
And this was how long after he's been in there? Over a year, right?
Over a year.
Yeah,
thank you. Over a year. He's been in there, and he goes to the doctor the second time. They're running these tests. They're draining his lungs. And they essentially say, yeah, we found cancer. And it's stage 4, and it's happened quick. Dad's like, how long have I had this cancer? I said, it's about a year old, couple months. Dad's like, wow, it's about the exact amount of time that I've been incarcerated. So
we need to do some more research on trauma
and
cancer.
I don't know.
We need some experts to come on and talk about that.
Well,
it's not a coincidence.
Also, when he was first incarcerated for the accident, he was really torn up because he, you know, knew that he had taken somebody's life. And if you knew my father and know him, that's the last thing he ever wanted was attention. Never wanted attention, never wanted to harm anybody. Everybody was his friend. He looked after people so much that at my father's funeral, part of the funeral was paid for by a grown man, who was a kid in high school with my father. And he said that my dad looked after him because I don't know if he was new or he got picked on or kind of something like that. But this guy said, if it wasn't for your dad, you know, I would have been bullied. And he was like the coolest guy in school and he looked after me. So this guy actually helped pay for my father's funeral.
All those years later.
And it's crazy to think that, you know, but yeah. So whenever they found out that he had cancer, they medically released him on a medical bond.
What was crazy is that for like a week, we didn't know what happened to him.
So that's what I didn't know.
You didn't hear from him.
I talked to him every day, every other day. And I told you, when I didn't hear from him for like 4 days, I was like, something's up. And I'm thinking, if my father has passed away in that jail, I'm going to freak out.
Yeah.
And so my sister calls to do a wellness check there at the jail. And she calls and the lady says, yeah, well, let me check and we'll call you back or something, or call back in an hour. So she calls. She's like, yeah, everything's good. My sister's like, what? That's it? That's all you can say? Yeah, it's all clear. Everything's good.
Meanwhile, he's really not even
and
there.
She's like, listen, I haven't got a phone call. There's money on his books. Like,
he calls every day.
Yeah. Why isn't he calling? You guys are just going to tell me everything's okay? turns out he's in the hospital. They don't want anybody to know that he's in the hospital because they think probably someone will go there. He's a high risk or target or whatever. Who knows? But they eventually release him under the care of my grandfather. So my grandfather is now in charge of my dad with an ankle monitor on while my dad has stage 4 cancer. My grandpa's like 80 years old. You know, it's like, it's just so crazy. And
well, how long was he in the hospital? He was in there for like a month.
Yeah, a month. So what happens is when the cancer is found and all of a sudden all these tests need to be run and possibly treatment, all this stuff. Well, the state doesn't want to pay for that. So the state's going to release him because they're not going to pay for all these medical bills. So they want him in custody, but they don't want to pay for his medicals. So he's released under the supervision of my grandfather with a GPS tracking device. Yeah, and so he had to kind of live with my grandfather for the last 3 months of his life.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, this ankle monitor, you have to plug it into the wall so it stays charged, but it doesn't really notify you. It like buzzes or something if it's low. But
what if you're like asleep? It's like, how are you?
Yeah, you fall asleep. Or so I think one time he didn't plug it in or something. And then so literally ankle monitor's dead. He's asleep. And they posted on the news like,
don't know where his whereabouts.
This person, we don't know where his whereabouts. His ankle monitor's not registering. It's like, dude, he's asleep.
Yeah.
He's not going anywhere. Has stage 4 cancer. You guys were worried about him?
Did they ever say that he had cancer on anything or was sick? Or
I don't remember. But
I don't think they ever said the details. I think, yeah, I don't know what they were saying on the news.
Father's last court date, the judge told him, cancer? You don't look that sick to me. That was probably the last time he was in front of that judge and he passed away. So those are the kind of people that are making decisions, are the people that look at somebody and say, you don't look that sick. Well, that's not really your call, you know.
Meanwhile, he's in excruciating pain every single day.
So
can't sleep, has to sit upright all day long. He has to drive an hour and a half to get to his court dates every week. He has to be drug tested. Like,
so my dad had never done any prescription pills or like he was. And then by the end of the stuff, he is on so many prescription medications. And it's just like,
he's basically withering away. I just want to get me out of the hospital.
It was really hard. But I believe in my heart of hearts that his prayer for his family, his prayer for the victim's family, his prayers to be released, they all of those hopefully have been answered. And on his release, you know, he got to see some of his family and he got to spend some time with his family before he passed. And he was in a ton of pain. And I remember when I saw him and I was just thinking in my head, I don't know how much longer this can last. I don't wish that upon anybody. And I know how strong my dad is. I know how tough of a person he is. And he was just, he couldn't function, couldn't move. You know, and what's crazy, he still had a good attitude.
Yeah.
And when he told me when he was in the hospital, when he found out that he had cancer, he's like, I just want to let you know, like, they ran some tests, it came back, now I have cancer and it's pretty far along. And I just want you to hear it from me. And I was like, well, you sound pretty good about it. He said, man, all the shit I've been through, Tyler, he's like, this one doesn't seem like that much. And so I kind of thought, wow, you know, it's like, I've never heard anybody that has told me that they've had cancer sound like they're in such a decent mood.
Well, that was his way out of jail, was the crazy part.
Mm-hmm.
Like, accident happens, he's in there for a year waiting, praying for a way to get out. Months, 13, 14, finds out he has cancer, gets out, gets to be in the comfort of his dad's home, gets to have family come see him anytime he wants. You know, that sounds like an answered prayer to me.
Yeah. It's really unbelievable how it all kind of transpired and went down. And I was just really happy with the fact that he knew that we were having a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had told him that the middle name would be Trace after my mother, Tracy. But after my father's passing, we decided to change the middle name to Jay after my dad, kind of honor him. And I think it's cool that he'll have that name, because now my dad's name kind of gets to live on a little bit longer. And
yeah,
I think it's pretty cool. And I'm grateful that you, you know, went along with that. And I'm grateful for that. So,
what is your take on losing your father, but then having a boy?
It's just a circle of life. I think that this whole situation has made me deal with my own mortality. I think maybe beforehand I was just living life. Then after my father, it's like, okay, I'm going to pass away. You know, I have to start thinking about, what do I want to leave behind? What are some things that are actually important? What is important? You know? Yeah. Having a boy, not that I get to, I have an opportunity with our son to build a relationship like me and my father had. And I think the best thing that my father could have left behind is those lessons that he taught me and that time that he spent with me. You know, I think that's the most valuable thing that we have as humans is our time and our energy. My dad put his time and energy and effort into me. And that's why I'm a level-headed, kind man, is because he instilled that in me, and I'm totally grateful
for that. Which will affect generations. You're going to affect him, and he's going to affect someone else. So
my father was extremely apologetic to this family. He had a handwritten note of an apology that he wanted to give to the victim's family, and the judge didn't want that, and they denied that. He never got to give it to them. His letter was never read by the victim's family. And I think, if this is correct, what I heard was that while my father, about a week, maybe a handful of days, maybe a couple of days before he passed, I don't know if it was the district attorney or who, somebody said, well, we just want an apology from him. We just want an apology.
The attorney for that family.
You guys want an apology from my father, and it's been over a year and a half, and now you want an apology from him? Well, he's now on his deathbed. He's out of it. He's non-responsive, and you guys want an apology from him? We had it. He had it. He had one handwritten, ready to hand over. They didn't want that. Courts didn't want that. The courts didn't allow it. They also told him, they pulled him up, and they said, you don't say anything to the media. You aren't allowed to say anything to the media. You don't talk to them. And it's like, how can you be told what you can and can't do? I don't know why he was told that. I don't know.
Who told him that? His own attorney or someone else?
The judge.
Oh. Because that makes him, that humanizes him and makes him look like a good guy and makes him look kind.
Well, the thing is, even kind people can make a mistake, or accidents can happen. And this situation honestly could have happened to anybody in that courtroom. But to not have compassion for somebody, or to not, that whole year and a half or however long my dad was dealing with taking another person's life, that was all going on in his head. Guess what? No one person, not a judge, not an attorney, not the victim's family, not anybody said, hey, how are you doing? Are you okay? Like, how do you feel? No one asks him, how do you feel? They assume how he feels. That's not fair. It's not fair to assume on another person. And
you just assume that he had no feelings towards it, or
he had no remorse. My dad had the most feelings of, he had the most feelings. My dad had the most feelings of probably any man I've met. So that messed him up. And that's why that cancer took him so quick. It was a downward spiral. And like I said, you guys, everybody wants justice. I want justice for, you know, things too. But sometimes it's not one person or one thing to blame. Maybe it's not justice we're searching for. Maybe it's actually an answer to what happened or why did this happen or how can we go, you know, in the future, how can we make sure that things like this don't happen? And that's the path, or I think how we need to look at it. You know, even if you guys, if everybody, if my father would have been prosecuted, put in jail, it doesn't take away that hurt and that pain that that family's feeling. They lost a very important person in their life. Not only that family, but that community lost all those other police officers. Like, they lost a brother. But my father's not a bad person. He wasn't a bad person. Yeah, it's really hard to deal with. And I'm really proud of my family for sticking by my dad, because they all knew how he was. And when the news came out and perceived him to be like this crazy monster, it's like,
No one believed it.
I was proud of the older people in my family because they still showed up to support him. You know? And that's called unconditional love. And just because someone makes a mistake doesn't mean you can't show love. And eventually, you know, there's going to be times in your life when someone does you dirty and someone does you wrong and someone hurts your feelings. The longer that you hold on to that resentment, it's going to weigh you down. And so it's best for us to engage and communicate and try to understand where the other person's coming from. But you're not going to know where the other person's coming from if you don't communicate with them. You can only assume. And maybe assuming how other people are feeling or what they're thinking isn't the best option to get an adequate understanding of how things are. Yeah, so I just want to apologize to everybody that was involved, and it's tragic, and I'm only, 3.5-4 months into, you know, losing my father, and these people on the other end of things are now, a year or two in. July will be 2 years. Things aren't going to bring anybody back. I want you to know we've all had a really hard loss. But all I can say is that, you know, I'm blessed for my family. I'm blessed to be here and be alive and grateful for each day. And life is truly, truly a blessing. And life is extremely precious. And we all have to look at each other every day and be grateful and thankful that we're here and enjoy our time and appreciate our time, because it's very precious. I'm grateful for the relationship that me and my father had. And I knew whenever he passed, I was just kind of like, well, I'm glad I didn't skip a day. Like, I'm glad I didn't like say, ugh, I'm not ever talking to him again, or, you know, or, my dad made mistakes, and I think he tried to be the best father and husband that he could be, but he obviously screwed up a lot. He made mistakes, but guess what? It's like unconditional love, you know, we got to support those that we love. And I don't know, my dad always looked after other people, and like I said, he didn't have social media, didn't want any attention. He loved hanging out with people. He never met a stranger. We talked to people in line. He, you know, talked to everybody. And
reminds me of someone.
That's just the whole family. That's what we do. No strangers.
Do you want to talk about the book?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, the last, you know, year and a half or however long my dad was incarcerated, I remember telling him, I'm like, you've worked so hard, like, my whole life. You've always been out on a roof. You've always been working. You've always leave when it's dark and get home when it's dark. That was just my life, you know. The poor guy's always dirty, always his construction worker. The last year he was incarcerated, I told him, I said, Dad, you always told me you wish you had more time. I wish I had more time. If I had more time, I'm reading this book, but I don't have time. I said, remember that? You always told me you wish you had more time. I said, now you have all the time in the world. You might not have all the resources right now, but you got pen and paper. You can write. You know how to write. That's a skill. That's something you can do. And so He wrote a book last year. He was incarcerated, and the book is going to be entitled Coincidental. And that comes back to coincidences are God's way of staying anonymous. That's Albert Einstein's quote. So essentially, it's a bunch of short stories compiled together that are a bunch of coincidences that happen in his life. And, you know, whether it's telling someone about a song and then it comes on the radio and just things like that. But it was really impressive to see that he could go back in his memory bank and pull all these things out, like as if it had happened yesterday. I told him, I stayed on him, like, you have time. Utilize your time. If you're not utilizing your time while you're in there, then you're going to be like everybody else. You're just a knucklehead. There's some knuckleheads in there that are have time to do stuff and work on themselves, and they're blowing their chance right now. And so he thought that was great advice. And I even told him when the accident first happened, I had to gas him up. I'm like, Dad, I said, you've run all these crews and, you know, you've run these crews. You've had your own business. I said, write a list of all of the buildings that you've ever worked on. And you will see, like, you were a part of some very important projects and you had some special clearances to a lot of places, you know. And so in my mind, this is how I feel about the situation. You have a man who was protecting and serving his community in a very righteous way, being a police officer and really doing good for his community. And then you have this other man who was a construction worker who worked on a lot of the prisons and jails and a lot of the universities and like I said, government governor's mansion and in different places. They were both crucial parts in that city being what it is, working men of the city. This man protected the city. My father helped build the city physically. When you want to make a story out of one person's bad, one person's good, we're all human. I believe in my mind, I think that we're all inherently good people. I think sometimes we could have bad tendencies or bad habits, but I think for most of us, we all have good intentions and goodwill and a good heart. I mean, I want to believe that. I know there's crazy people out there, but they're not crazy all the time. So we all need each other. We're all going to need each other at different times.
Yeah, and they both passed away tragically, you know. So
right now there are two families, three families that are, we're, you know, missing somebody. And so that grieving process is going to take a while, and it's not ever going to be the same. I thought, and before we had him, I was like, well, you know, when I have my son, I'm going to be all right. And then we had him, and it's like, it's just different. It's a different connection, you know? It doesn't fill the void of my missing father, but it does provide an opportunity for me to reestablish a deep connection like I had before. But now I'm just in a different role.
Yeah.
I'm the father this time, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. I'm lucky to have had all that advice and lucky to have had my father as long as I did. Some people don't have that chance to have that connection. And a lot of people might not even know their father, you know?
I'm proud of you. And thanks. I'm proud of how you've handled everything. And, you know, I think we've said this recently where our situations are obviously different, but yours was kind of a drawn out process as far as maybe you could ponder on the thought of your father passing away and maybe dealing with it beforehand, before it actually happened. And my situation was
very quick.
A shock. I didn't have any premeditated thoughts on my mom ever dying. I mean, obviously I said that she had said it, but again, in my mind, it was like, she'll never do that. If I have some advice, if someone is threatening their own life, take them seriously.
Yeah, it's a serious thing.
Yeah, because you just never know. So I feel like maybe you've had the time to be like, this is a possibility of this happening, and maybe that's why you've dealt with it a little bit better.
Let's talk about this. How many times do you get to see your mom or dad or whoever it is, maybe your son or daughter? How many times a year do you get to see them? Is it Thanksgiving, Christmas, maybe 4th of July? Okay, that's three times. Let's say you see your family 3 times in the year. All right, well, how many more years you got left? You know, it's like, okay, when you break that down, man, that's only like 40 or 50 more visits. I mean, you get where I'm going with this. You can start putting actual physical numbers on how many more summers I got left. You don't get a ton of opportunities like you think that you do.
Mm-hmm.
So these moments and these times are important. Yeah.
Proud of you.
Thanks, babe.
Love you.
I love you too.
And yeah, I get to pass it on.
Yeah. Now here we are, mom and dad, and we're missing our mom and dad, but I think that both of us are very capable. We're very understanding. We're very instinctual, and we're good-hearted and good intentions. Yeah. I think we both do a lot for other people and for our community. And I think a lot of people appreciate our company, which is nice.
Yeah.
And I think we appreciate the company of a lot of others too.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what you have in this life. You know, you have an opportunity to establish some really deep connections with other human beings. And I think after you leave this earth, that's what's left is those lessons, those moments, and those times. And I will forever be grateful for my dad, times that we shared.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that I got to meet your mother on Siesta Key. And I'm glad she made an amazing family. You know, not only a couple amazing daughters, but I love your brothers too. And I'm like really proud to be a part of that family. So I'm glad that you're a part of mine too.
Thanks.
All right.
I should sign off so we can go cry.
Okay. This is a crying episode. All right, babe. I love you. I'm proud of you.
Love you too.